think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 239 of Low Limit Football on this 8th of April, 2019, on the Beyond the Pitch and FNX Media Networks. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we're going to ask the ever-evolving question, who is the best player in the EPL? Giorgio Chiellini may be out of Wednesday's Champions League clash against Ajax with an ankle injury picked up in practice today. LAFC continues to roll in MLS. Their latest victim, defensive power DC United, and Wayne Rooney sees red in the match. And racism rears its very ugly head again in Europe and again in Italy. We're going to discuss that and much, much more with our very special guest, Mr. Stel Stilianu from the Shoot the Defense podcast, who will be joining us in just a few minutes. But let me get my co-host in here after a great week off. Mr. Roberto Rojas, how are you, my man?
Very well, Joe. How about yourself?
I was worried about that there. Sounded like you're a little delayed there. I'm rested. How's that? I've got my good tan going on, you know, after a good week off in Mexico. I had a fantastic time. So good to be back in the saddle, though. Good to be back to work and talking about football. Although I got plenty of that in Mexico because everywhere you go, everyone wanted to talk football. And I brought a couple of jerseys. I brought my Chivas jersey. I brought my Santos jersey. And I picked up my brand new addition to my soccer jersey collection, Rob, a number 10 Andre Pierre Gignac Tigres jersey that I'm very, very excited for. I'm probably going to wear that sometime this week. So let me ask you, who is the best player in the Premier League?
Oh, I guess it all depends on what team you want to win the Premier League or what team you support.
I was going to say, is it breakfast, is it lunch, or is it dinner? Because it seems to evolve based on meal at this point.
Well, aren't you supposed to eat 5-6 meals a day, though, from what I've heard?
Well, then, yeah. Well, then we're like hobbits, because then we have breakfast, we have second breakfast, we have Levensies, you know, we have lunch, then we, you know, it's just amazing. I woke up this morning, and someone would have told me that Sergio Aguero was the best player in the EPL. And then I was listening to the radio, driving around for work late morning, early afternoon, and I hear Virgil van Dijk is the best player in the EPL. Then I'm driving around about 3:30 in the afternoon, and I'm hearing Eden Hazard is the best player in the EPL. I'm sure by the time we get off this show, we will have Paul Pogba as the best player in the EPL. You might get N'Golo Kante sighting, you know, maybe even a David De Gea, right? I mean, we might got to give the goalie some love. So it just seems like every 2 minutes we're discussing.
Well, let's ask the million-dollar question. Yeah. Who is the best player, according to you?
I'm not going to say Eden Hazard.
Neither will I.
I'm not going to, because I feel like as much as Chelsea fans right now are absolutely in love with him, and, you know, some may want to have his children just to keep him at Chelsea, I also have blamed him time and time again for many of the collapses that Chelsea has experienced over the past few years. So I'm not going to say Eden Hazard. God, I don't, you know, Mo Salah?
Mo Salah, I think, is a good call. Right now, I'd also, I think you could give Sadio Mane props, right? I think that's another one. I also want to add that Alisson could be considered one of the quote-unquote most valuable players, seeing that he's got the full season there now and Liverpool is still battling for the title, where Virgil van Dijk did have a half season at Liverpool and they did not battle. I was too far gone for them, but I would say one of those two pieces might be the ones that you mentioned. I think it's a wide open discussion. I think it's a topic that needs a little more context, right? I think if you want to talk who's the best midfielder, do you talk Kevin De Bruyne? Do you talk Jorginho or N'Golo Kante? You know, who do you tab for that, right? So I think it requires some context, but I don't think any one of the, I don't think you can say, it's just funny how, depending on what media outlet you're listening to, is the focus, you know what I mean? It's where they are in that moment. All of a sudden that person is the best player. And that, I think, drives me a little batty, because we look at a body of work of 47 seconds, right? And now we're gonna say X, Mr. X or Mr. Y is the greatest player. And then this time next week, Rob, we could ask this same question and we'll probably get a different result.
You know, my pick is Raheem Sterling.
Okay, see, and another player I think that we can add to the mix and justify, okay? His body of work over the course of the season, who could disagree with you, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I think Raheem Sterling's a good shout as well. I just think that the question is crap. How's that? So let's get into the show then. I believe you, my friend, have trivia tonight.
Yes, I do.
So if you would do your honors, I will go ahead and see if I can get the answer right.
All right, so this is sticking into the Premier League. Mm-hmm. I do have an interesting one about one of the players that you actually mentioned. Mm-hmm. So this is the one I just had. Just give me one second. Where are you? I'm prepared always, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's multiple options, right?
Exactly, yeah. Mm. Okay, here we go.
All right.
Mohamed Salah scored his 50th goal this weekend and became the third fastest player to score 50 goals for a single Premier League club. Can you name the other two players to have done it in a lesser period of time?
Other two players?
There have been only two players that have scored 50 Premier League goals for one club faster than Mo Salah. Salah did it in 69 games. There are two players who have done it in less games. Name them.
Okay, I have two names written down. We're going to try that one out. That's a good question, though. I think I have a feeling one of my answers is like always the answer to this question. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going to write down one more name, but I'm going to go with my first two, and then I'll give you, if one of them is wrong, I'll give you my third name, but we'll give you that at the end of the show. So let's jump into opening thoughts tonight, Rob. And opening thoughts, unfortunately, is a topic that we seem to revisit regularly, and it is racism in football. And this leads back now, the latest edition of this mess is Moise Kean at Juventus at Cagliari last weekend is the bearer or the recipient of monkey chants from the Cagliari faithful during their match, which saw Juve win 2-0. Also, Douglas Costa and Blaise Matuidi, also black footballers, were the subject of these racist chants as well. Nothing was done again by the referee. Although, and if you watched Twitter during this time, it was an evolution of people going back and literally just replaying the sounds. Did I really hear what I just hear? And they would confirm, yes, I am hearing those chants, which means it's got to be incredibly loud and incredibly clear for a person on the other side of a television to be able to disseminate the racist chants that are going on. It means it's not one person, Rob. It means it is a group, and a very large group for that matter. So what happens? Because I don't know what to talk about and what's worse in this situation. Moise Kean then goes on to score, I believe, his fifth goal in his fifth match for Juventus in this match, and then taunts the crowd who has been shouting these chants at him all night. He's pulled away by some of his teammates. In fact, the Cagliari captain, who right now is, I've lost his name here quickly, but I had it in front of me, was asked, Piero Giacomelli was actually, I'm sorry, he's the referee. It was Luca Cepitelli. He's the Italian captain for Cagliari. He's asking the fans to stop the chants because of what was going on. Again, reading this story partially from the New York Times, Giorgio Chiellini was protesting to the referee Giacomelli to stop the match or to do something about it. And we've seen this happen before. We saw it most recently just in December against Kalidou Koulibaly at the Napoli Inter match, where he was also the recipient of racist chants. Got himself actually a red card and thrown out of the match for it, which he then apologized to his teammates, where his teammates saw no reason for his apologies, seeing that he was receiving this abuse. Carlo Ancelotti stepped to his player's defense and said the referee should have stopped this match because of what was going on. And I think this is where this situation, Rob, devolves for me. We saw players, we saw managers come to the defense of a player who was the recipient of these racist chants in Koulibaly's case, in the Napoli case. That's not entirely what we saw here in the Juventus case. And as a Juventino, this makes me sick to my stomach, Rob. With Leo Bonucci, we're going to start there with him and his comments, where he felt that that both people were in the wrong. He kind of played what I called the Donald Trump card, where the, you know, where Donald Trump and Charlottesville said, oh, there were bad, you know, they're bad people on both sides. His comments were, there were racist jeers after the goal. Blaze heard it and was angry. I think the blame is 50-50. Moise should not have done that, and the Cordova should not have reacted that way. He basically does not defend his teammate for kind of sticking the massive middle finger at the Cagliari faithful for saying, yeah, chant at me all these racist chants all you want. In the end, I've scored on your team, and your team is going to lose. Which is, for me, without instigating a riot, Keane gives the best response. He scores a goal and he just stares at the crowd. We're done, right? This game is over. I ended it. And go ahead, keep on shouting, because in the end, I win, right? But he doesn't defend him. You know, also, we talk about Max Allegri. Max Allegri suggested that Keane had provoked some of this. He should not have celebrated in that manner, Allegri said after the match. He's a young man and has to learn, but certain things from the crowd also should not be heard. So not really defending Moise Keane here in this one as well. I want to throw this over to you because I feel like I've talked about this for a little bit here, Rob, and I want you to get in here. But for me, this is disgusting on so many levels, and I want you to get your two-minute rant in on this before we start to dive into it a little deeper.
It's kind of interesting how Bonucci, you know, is kind of the one trying to say that it comes from both ends, when he was a player that was getting just as much abuse when he left Juventus to go to Milan, and he got those, well, not chants, but he did get abuse from him as well. And, you know, I don't know if you remember, Joe. Yeah. I believe he scored against Juve.
Great point. I'm not mistaken. And he celebrated.
Yeah. So it's kind of hypocritical in a way, mm-hmm. to not say that and try to defend a teammate like Moise Keane. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Agreed.
Because, go ahead.
No, please, I continue.
No, I just feel that it doesn't make sense how in 2019, yes, and I'm sure in the interview that we're going to listen to it today with Stell, they talk about how, oh, it's a cultural thing and therefore it won't change. Well, things have to change eventually. You know, one has to learn from history in order not to repeat it. Mm-hmm. So when you see incidents like this that has happened, not recently, mind you, this has been going on for decades, generations, you know, targeting black players all around the world because of this. Right. Why? Because, you know, he's a good player, because he's young, and because, above all, you know, you're going against, yes, I understand, you know, it makes sense if you want to boo at him and, you know, say explicit, but to do chants like that, monkey chants to a black player, is disgraceful. I feel like that's absolutely disgraceful. I think, unfortunately, Serie A, the FIGC, isn't going to do anything, because we've seen a history of such things happen where nothing has going on. So, unfortunately, it's now up to these players, to the teammates, and of course to the fans on social media. They need to do something where, I know this is not going to happen, but, you know, if I'm a member of the FIGC or member of Serie A, you know, I personally would love to punish, you know. I know it's hard to say you can't punish a certain amount of – you can't, like, do a stadium ban or a points reduction to because of a few stupid fans. Well, you know, it's a group of fans, but, you know, in order to do – in order to contribute to some action, you need to go in and do it. You need to see how it feels like, because otherwise it's just going to keep going. Right. So what – so, yes, fans make up the sport, and it's a good thing that they do. But when stuff like this happens – you have to take drastic measures. Desperate times call for drastic measures, and I think that now you need to really fully understand that this is only going to continue to happen if nothing is done. Mm-hmm. And this is no discredit to Juventus. This is no discredit to Cagliari. But when stuff like this happens, you need to be punished because, unfortunately, that's what you're putting yourself into.
Right.
Your actions are leaving a bad taste not only to yourself, but to the club on an international level. And that's the last thing that these players and these people that work in the club want,
right.
A bad reputation. Because if that happens, then that's what they're always going to be remembered for that moment.
I'm still waiting for the punishment on Inter for Koulibaly. You know, we've seen the stadium bans, right? We've seen them play. We've seen teams play behind closed doors. It doesn't work. We've seen the education aspect. We've seen that happen to Juventus when their fans did this. It doesn't work. This needs to be a strong statement, okay? For me, the first person I'm actually going to fault that could have affected this situation is Max Allegri. The first person that should have acted is Giacomelli, the referee. Okay, let's establish one thing here. When this all happens, it's obvious, right? It is a group. It is a large group because of the evidence that this can be heard through television. Okay? This is not something that was just Moise Keane heard as he was running to get a ball to take a corner kick. This is something that was loud and it was clear and it was obvious. First person that I blame right now is Giacomelli. Giacomelli should have pulled both teams off the field, gone to Cagliari brass and said, listen, we're not playing and you're going to lose until you fix this. Okay? And put it on Cagliari. Fix this now. This is it. We're not going to mess around with this anymore. Fix it. Okay? That did not happen. So the next person I blame is Max Allegri. And at this point, even though Giacomelli is the person I'm going to blame first, Max Allegri is the one I'm going to blame the most. Because I rewind back to Carlo Ancelotti and what he said when Koulibaly suffered these racist chants. When that happened, Ancelotti said we should have pulled the team off the pitch, right? And it's very difficult to pull a team off the pitch when you're in a title race, right? Wouldn't you agree, Rob?
Yeah, and especially when you want to win.
Exactly.
Because I think Raheem Sterling said this today, you know, if a team was to walk out of the pitch, you know, that just shows that the racists have won because they gave up.
See, and I don't believe that. I don't necessarily agree with that. For me,
let me see if I could find the full quote. Actually,
no, that's fine. So the reason I blame Allegri, and where I blame him, as opposed to Ancelotti. Ancelotti had the idea to do it, but he didn't do it in the spot. Allegri's not playing for anything in that match, right? Serie A's done. Ronaldo's not playing. We're not going for Capo Cannoniere here. There is nothing to play for in Cagliari. There is zero. The only thing that's going to happen is somebody's going to get hurt. So you know what? The minute these racist chants continue to happen and the referee does nothing, Allegri calls his 11 players and goes, let's go. Let's go. Hit the locker room. We're out of here. And then when the ref says something, they go, no, we forfeit because they can't handle their fans. And we're not going to come and play this match. And we're done. And he pulls the team off. And that makes a massive, massive, massive statement to the FIGC, to the Serie A, to the fans at Juventus, to the fans at Cagliari, to Moise Keane, to Blaise Matuidi, to Douglas Costa, to other black players. We will not play in this condition because it is not right to do that. It is just not, it's morally wrong to do that. And it would have made a massive
Massive, massive statement. Think of Pep Guardiola pulling Manchester City off the pitch.
Oh, that would be huge. That'd be absolutely huge.
Enormous, right? Jose Mourinho did it. When he was coaching United, pulled Chelsea off because someone's racist chants against Marcus Rashford, right? Massive stuff. Didier Deschamps pulls the French national team off the pitch because someone's saying something about N'Golo Kanté. This is not your this guy. This is not Chievo. Do you know what I mean? This is not some bottom feeder team walking off the pitch. This is Juventus. This is the 8-time Serie A champion. Okay, that's who's walking off the pitch. It's not some lowly second division team. This is King Kong here. Okay, and they're walking because you can't handle your fans. That would have made a massive, massive statement. How do you fix this from here, Rob? And we'll talk about it with Stell in a minute. Point deductions, I think, are absolutely in order. Okay. I think in this case, where you do your investigations, where you know it is your curva, this is not like Juventus planted 10 guys there to do this so Cagliari would lose points. You know, these are your peeps. Okay. Point deductions, whatever, 3, 6, 9, 12, whatever it may be, deduct the points. Now you have a situation where Cagliari is going to get relegated. Think of all the money they'll lose. You think they'll put extra people in the stands to police this? You know, how could they not? Think of the millions they would lose if they get relegated because of monkey chants. That's a massive statement. And I think that's a statement that the FIGC should make now. I think they should deduct points. I think they should go back and deduct points to Inter too, if you ask me, Rob.
Definitely.
I think they should go do that because they never dealt with that. You close the curva. Big deal. Who cares? Okay? Just a couple season ticket holders lose a match. So what? You know? Drop the team down.
You kind of almost have to be radical in these decisions.
Yeah, you do.
And that's fine.
You do. And I think that is a good short-term solution, Rob. The long-term solution is something that the FIGC, Ligue 1, La Liga, the EPL, the FA, they can't do. And that's the cultural aspect of this. And I say that because even in this country where we talk about Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in baseball and all that stuff, we still have racism even in the United States. This is not a perfect country, okay? And so those things need to also change. So we need a social change, but that social change is something that is beyond sport, okay? That just goes into society, and that's not something that Max Allegri can do or Leo Bonucci can do or Moise Keane can do. It's something that everyone has to take part in. But I think on the surface, because we deal mainly with sport and this is a sport situation, Max Allegri, for me, is the person that should bear the most blame and I think could have affected the most change in this immediate situation. And it's sad that he let an opportunity escape him. That's my two cents on it. Did you want to add any more to this? Did you happen to find that Raheem Sterling quote at all?
No. He just said that, you know, he urges players to call out racism but not walk off the pitch.
Okay.
That's what he said. He said if you do walk off the pitch as a group, that kind of makes them win.
See, and I just don't feel that way because walking off the pitch makes a statement. And the more at risk when the team walks off the pitch, the more egg it puts on the opposition. The more egg it puts on the officials. Once you got to remember, Rob. Once a whistle blows to start a match, that's the referee's in charge.
Yep.
Okay. He says yes or no. This is it. Once he blows that whistle, he is the authority in the building, and it was on him to stop that. So, I know we've rambled on quite a bit about this, and I want to get to Stell's interview because it was an awesome interview that we were able to do yesterday. So I'd like to play for everyone now the Stell Stiliano interview. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from the Great Shoot the Defense podcast, Mr. Stell Stiliano. Stell, how are you tonight?
I'm great, thanks, gentlemen. Thanks for having me back on the show. Apologies for my voice; it's a bit hoarse. You know, the change in weather doesn't help me much, but you know, it is what it is.
Thankfully, it's getting warmer though. I mean, the miserable winter is almost done, and we can finally look forward to better days, right?
Well, you don't live in England, mate. It's winter every day.
I know. So let's jump into it. Rob and I have been talking about the Leo Bonucci. I'm sorry, not Leo Bonucci, but Moise Keane incident at Cagliari a little over a week ago now.
and the lack of defense from his defender in Leo Bonucci and the lack of defense from his manager in Max Allegri. Also, the fact that the racist remarks or the monkey chants that they were described as were not only towards Moise Kean, but towards Blaise Matuidi and Douglas Costa in the match. And at the same time, it was Kean that scored the goal and kind of antagonized the Cagliari crowd, which doesn't defend what the crowd did. I want your opinion on this, because we've seen this happen in Italy again. We talk about Kalidou Koulibaly that happened a few weeks ago, probably a little closer to Christmas time. Now we've seen it again happen. We've seen an inactive referee or do nothing about it, even though the players were complaining to him. But I want you to relate it in terms of what has happened most recently in England with Callum Hudson-Odoi at Chelsea and with Raheem Sterling at Manchester City, who have experienced similar treatment. But really, we haven't seen any of these FAs really take a hard stance on this, and we haven't seen UEFA do it or FIFA do it yet either. So I wanted to ask your opinion on the situation, and then how do we fix this problem that we have, especially in European football?
It's Groundhog Day, isn't it?
And again.
We keep talking about the same thing, and nothing ever gets done about it. The Hudson-Odoi thing happened in Montenegro, wasn't it, in the qualifier?
That's right.
And I actually spoke about this on the One Up Front podcast the other day, and I said, well, it's a cultural thing, and it doesn't excuse it, yeah, but it, as I said, it's a cultural thing, it's an educational thing. I mean, I come from a Cypriot background, so I can kind of see what goes on out there. Their stance on racism is, well, they don't have one, really. Anything goes, as far as they're concerned, and the authorities don't do anything about it. And, you know, Italy isn't too far from Cyprus, so we've got a very, very similar culture. And again, it goes back to being educated. It's about being taught right from wrong. Obviously, you know, they are taught certain things, but it's almost as if, like, you know, throwing racial comments is acceptable in these places because they laugh it off. And it's like, oh, you know, that black person, this and that. And it's... It just won't stop, will it? You know, it's a society thing. It isn't just a football thing. You know, they were saying, you know, racism has crept back into football, but it never left. It's just that these days, because of the way social media is, it's magnified even more. I'm sure that as time goes on, it may not be in my generation, might not be in my daughter's generation, but it might be in the next generation that it ends. But unfortunately, there's a lot of ignorant people and a lot of people that find it acceptable, until these people are kicked out of the game or kicked out in society. If you could just put them on an island on their own and just make sure they never come back, that'd be great. It's never going to end, unfortunately.
I agree, you know, but my concern is, I think fixing the societal issue is a very, very long-term situation. I mean, I think currently the current climate in even this country in the United States, we thought that we were on the right path, and there have been incidences that tell us that we are not on the right path yet. So I think that type of thing is still worldwide. But I think from purely a football focus or a football standpoint, I've heard everything from keeping fans, you know, playing in empty stadiums, which apparently doesn't work, because that has happened before. It's happened at Juventus. It's happened in multiple other places, and it doesn't seem to work. So when do we – what – give me a situation that you feel would be an earth-shattering moment where finally they would take focus and say, listen, okay, this is how we can fix this, or this is where we need to fix this.
Joe, it's like what I said when I came on your show last time. You got to threaten points deductions. That's the only way you can do it. That's the only way you can do it. You can either threaten a points deduction or expulsion from a competition. It happened with Millwall in the FA Cup a few weeks ago. I think it was against Everton. And there were really bad racial slurs. And I said, well, just kick them out of the tournament. And people were saying to me, well, you can't punish the fans for one or two people. I was like, well, at Millwall, it was hundreds of people, you know? So what are you going to do? I see, you know, Kick It Out doing really well with the Premier League this season, and the likes of Troy Townsend and all these others, they're appearing on television to spread the word and get their message across. But it just seems to be falling on deaf ears, because it's almost as if the Premier League have got this ethical procedure to follow, but they're not going to follow it from, a business standpoint or from a ruling standpoint, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can say, yeah, we're doing our utmost to prevent it or end it, but are they really having someone like Raheem Sterling in a 2-minute vignette or video montage saying, kick it out? It really isn't going to do anything, is it?
Mm-mm.
Let's be honest. Until you turn around and throw the book at teams and say, right, we're going to bring in this rule whereby if your team or any fans are found hurling racial abuse at players or whoever, then there's a ban. And then you're going to have people saying, well, what if a fan is planted in the home end and he supports another team and it's basically fixed to do that? Well, that's where you get your investigations cleared. You know, you do some background research on the person. You see if they've got season tickets with other clubs or memberships at other clubs or even posters of players from other clubs. Just little things here and there. I mean, it's not rocket science.
Hmm.
But as I said before, it goes back to what I said, I think, the last time I came on. When you start deducting teams' points, I guarantee you it's going to end up at the arbitration of sport, the court of arbitration of sport. You know, and then it's going to be like, well, you know, one person has cost us 10 points to be deducted. It's not fair, blah, 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 blah. And then some old geezer hundreds of miles away that is probably a racist himself is going to say, well, okay, we're going to overturn it and we're going to fine the Premier League for docking teams' points. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? It really is.
You know, still, obviously, I think, you know, you're right into saying that such punishments should be made, and obviously, you know, fans all have a voice, but I think I want to talk about more about in terms of the media, because obviously, you know, this is a controversial case that perhaps has been going around the world and all in support of players like Sterling, Hudson-Odoi, and Moise Kean, but you do have some, unfortunately, who try to compare. I think this might be a different thing, but I think referring to the Gordon Strachan comment that he made a couple of days ago comparing racism to, I believe it was Adam Johnson or something. You know, do you feel that that's just completely unnecessary? And, you know, what would you say, I guess, to the media that, you know, obviously need to become more held accountable when dealing with situations like this?
Well, I can say this off the top of my head, that there's probably two or three black journalists within the mainstream media, and I'm talking about the newspapers. That's just off the top of my head. I can't think of that many that are involved in journalism or in the media from to be upfront, to be, you know, in the camera and to have their views heard on a regular basis. So the media does have a duty to bring more black journalists. I mean, I've got a friend that went to a function and he spoke to a white journalist from a certain newspaper, which I'm not going to mention. And he said to him, well, this whole Raheem Sterling stuff from the Daily Mail, what's that all about? And the guy didn't have an answer. He was like, well, we didn't kind of realize how bad it was until, you know, Twitter and social media understood what it was about or brought it to their attention. Rob, I don't have an answer to your question, my friend. As I said before, it's a society thing, right? And when you've got certain news outlets that have got their own agendas or believe that printing certain stories, whether it be a footballer that's got a tattoo or whether a footballer's got a new hairstyle, they know that it sells papers. So they're going to continue to do it. The only way it's going to stop is people stop clicking or stop buying the newspapers. But unfortunately, you know, everyone has got that element of curiosity in them. So they're going to want to just look at it. Or, you know, they see the article or the headline and think, right, I need to read it. Just for the sake of doing it, or to see what happens, or what kind of sensationalism there is. So, I don't know, mate. I can't answer your question. I'm sorry.
It's all good. I think I got it answered anyway, so don't worry about
it. Put it this way. Social media has made us more aware about things. Yeah, you've got certain people that have got an agenda, and certain people put out fake news just for the sake of doing it, or just for the clout, so to speak. but at the same time, you know, how many credible journalists are there out there? I mean, if you think about it, the ones that tweet or print or have any, or post rubbish, you know more of them than the credible ones, if that makes sense. You know, they outweigh the credible ones.
It's because they try to ease off more attention, because they realize that such stuff like that gives them much more attention. It's a sad reality, but I think that's exactly what you're trying to say there, Stel. You know, that unfortunately, because of that, foolishness or whatnot, that gives them more attention, because I think that's just how, as you said, it's kind of a society thing that has unfortunately left the, you know, the more reliable, more respectable ones out on the dust. So,
you know, I'll give you a quick example, right? In the UK, we've got a problem with knife crime. Every day there's a report of a teenager getting stabbed, or I mean, even this morning, I think an 18-year-old was arrested for stabbing a 20-year-old and killing him. Now, I'd say 90% of the time, when you see a story like that on Twitter and you read the replies, it's like, oh, he's in a gang. Well, that's not necessarily true, is it? But that's how people want to spin it, and that's the stereotype that goes with it. So what are you going to believe?
No, and unfortunately, that's kind of the bad perception that is made to situations like this. So it's a sad reality that we are able to see. So it's sad. Anyway, let's stick more into the football. Obviously, we do have two quality Champions League ties coming up. Well, actually, we have four of them, but we have really great matches on Tuesday and Wednesday. We have on Tuesday, we have Liverpool against Porto. We have Spurs against Manchester City. On Wednesday, we have Ajax against Juventus. And obviously, we have your beloved Manchester United taking on Barcelona. Obviously, four interesting ties there. So I guess I'll start here with the United one against Barcelona. You know, obviously, it's very impressive to see, you know, all these four English clubs perform well in the Champions League so far. But I just want your take, Stel, on United's view heading into this game, especially playing at home at Old Trafford first.
I'll be 100% honest with you. I was absolutely shocked that we turned it around against Paris Saint-Germain. I think most football fans were as well. I don't know that many people that believe that United could get a win, let alone go through. It was a fantastic performance. I know Paris Saint-Germain had a few clear-cut chances, which they were very wasteful in front of goal. But at the same time, you know, VAR did its job and we went through. And on the balance of play, when you talk about opportunities and, I don't know, making the most of their chances, I think we kind of deserved it in the second leg. As I said, Paris Saint-Germain were wasteful, and that's what happens in football. You know, if you don't take your chances, like today with Wolves, they didn't take their chances, and Watford ended up beating them. I mean, you've seen it time and time again. But, you know, getting drawn against Barcelona, it didn't surprise me. When I saw the draw, I was like, well, you know, we've made it this far. I was surprised to even get out of the group stage, to be fair, the way that things were at the beginning of the season. So to get this far, yeah, it's relatively pleasing. But at the same time, if and when we get knocked out by Barcelona, what happens to our top four push? For me, that's the priority. Granted, I'd love to win the Champions League again, but I really can't see it happening. It's going to be a difficult game, enough as it is. And when you've got someone like Lionel Messi playing against you, who's probably in the form of his life at the moment, and that's saying something because he's been in the form of his life all of his life, you know? So it's going to be I'm scared. I'm actually absolutely scared. I'm bricking it, as we say. But listen, over two legs, anything can happen. If we get a good result at home, I can't see why we can't go away from home and maybe grab something. I think we really need to make the most of the set pieces that we get, or if we do get any, i.e. free kicks, corners, because we've got the height and the aerial threat to cause them problems. And we've got the pace on the break. I don't think Barcelona are great defensively when it comes to, you know, a back four. I know they're a very solid unit and, you know, the manager's done remarkably well to make them tighter at the back. And I know they're doing remarkably well in the La Liga. But at the same time, if we can hit them on the break a couple of times, you never know. We've got the pace. But again, our form is poor at the moment. And defensively, we're at 16 and 7s. We're all at sea. So, yeah, I'm really not confident. But you know what? It's football and stranger things have happened.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And Joe, obviously, I think, following up to your team against Ajax, an Ajax team that did displace Real Madrid in the round of 16. You know, what is your take on this tie in particular?
You know, I've said it before. This is a tie that I was certainly worried about. I give Ajax more credit than I think most do in terms of their quality. I think for me, I'm mesmerized by their youth, but at the same time, you know, you look back at where Juventus is. They've sealed up the Serie A. I know they're still points away. They still need to get there. They're not officially the champions, but they are close enough to being there. So I think that's not going to be that much of an issue. The focus is really the Champions League here. The focus is getting Cristiano Ronaldo healthy so that he's ready for Ajax. And I think that is the very dangerous piece if you're an Ajax fan. We saw Cristiano Ronaldo and Juventus break down, in my opinion, one of the top three defenses in the world in Atletico Madrid. We saw an Atletico Madrid team that has Griezmann, that has Douglas Costa. Diego Costa, and neither of them scored over 180 minutes. I think those are massive, massive points that you have to take away from what they did in Atleti, and to turn around a 2-0 disadvantage to a 3-0 victory against that defense. I think it showed you the Juventus that I think everybody expected to see this year, but we really hadn't seen it up until now. So I think you can see that their focus is the Champions League. Having said that, I think that the young team that we have at Ajax, we saw Dusan Tadic do some great things in the Champions League, really was massive in that second leg against Real Madrid. Those are things that are concerning to me. We saw Frankie de Jong play very, very well in the midfield there. The guy that I want to see at Juventus next year, Mattia De Ligt, also play well. You've got to remember, he's only 19 years old, but playing with veteran mentality. So there are pieces there that concern me, but I think in the end, there's too much experience, there's too much talent on the Juventus side, and in the end, they shouldn't be troubled by this Ajax team, but it is certainly a banana skin that you could see that happening if they go down a goal here early. Stel, I kind of want to throw that over to you and get your thoughts real quick on Ajax Juve. But at the same time, I want to know what you think also about Liverpool Porto, and then maybe we can close up with City Spurs.
Sure. Okay, well, look, I tipped Ajax to beat Real Madrid over the two legs, which they did, obviously, hence the reason why they're in this round. And the reason being is that Real Madrid, they've had somewhat of a fractious season. Solari was appointed, and you could tell he wasn't the right man. The results weren't great. You could see their league position at the moment. The performance in the second leg was shocking, and for Sergio Ramos to intentionally get a yellow card to miss a second leg was foolish, to put it nicely. So I wasn't surprised to see Ajax go through, but Juventus are a different animal. They're more stable. They're not a team full of individuals. And when you've got Cristiano Ronaldo in your team, anything can happen. You know, as you saw, as you mentioned in the second leg against Atletico, I mean, a lot of people were saying, you know, this is a team that doesn't concede goals. They'll shut up shop. They'll hold on to that lead. And lo and behold, he grabs a hat-trick. So I can't see Ajax giving Juventus too many problems. You know, in Amsterdam, it'll be tricky, but I think Juventus will get a positive result and beat him in the second leg. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
And how about looking at the other two ties? Let's start with Liverpool Porto in the second tie, because I think this could be a tricky spot for Liverpool as well, don't you think?
I'll be honest with you, I can't see anything other than Liverpool dismantling them totally. Okay. Look, I know Porto have been pretty decent. Tiquinho's doing well. Brahimi's doing well. Mariga. But I think, isn't Abubakar injured? He's going to be injured.
I believe so.
So he may miss the second letter. The first leg, Telles, may also miss the left back.
Yes.
And they've got Pepe. Now, can you imagine Pepe against Mo Salah and Sadio Mane? He hasn't got the legs, to be fair. I know it's a team game, but at the same time, I think they're going to target him as the main, how can I put it, the weak link, so to speak. Liverpool trounced them last season. I know the second leg was 0-0, but they beat them 5-0 in the first leg, and I can't see anything other than a similar scoreline, really. And this isn't a disrespect to Porto, because as I said, they're a fine team. But let's be honest, they beat a Roma that have basically stunk up the place all season. So I don't know. It's going to be a Liverpool win. It's going to be easy for them.
And I agree with you too, especially when you talk about pointing out Insane and Mane and Salah, where you're talking about a lot of team speed there. You also you take into account the wings that they have in Alexander Arnold and Robertson on the wings. There is a lot of team speed that you get. You even get Jorge Wijnaldum in the midfield. There's plenty of team speed on this Liverpool side that I think you're right will probably overwhelm Porto and carry on.
I'm just more interested to cut in there, mate, but I'm more interested to see what midfield three Klopp plays, because over the past few weeks he's gone with Henderson, Milner and Wijnaldum, and it hasn't seemed to work. But when he's brought on Fabinho, he pulls the strings in the middle of the park. So I think this game is key for him. And Naby Keita obviously had a good game against Southampton the other day, so he's in contention. But Liverpool got strength and depth this season. I said at the beginning of the year, beginning of the season, they've got that extra 20-30% to take them forward. And back in the last season, in fact, I came on your show a couple of days after the Champions League final. I said, look, when Salah got injured, they didn't have a plan B.
Right.
But now they do. You know, Shaqiri can come off the bench and people laugh, but Shaqiri's done remarkably well this season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's gone to a big club with big history, and a lot of big name players have gone to Liverpool and failed. But he's gone there, and it's like a duck to water. So they've got him to come off the bench. They've got so many options. And, you know, you mentioned Alexander-Arnold. Well, against Southampton, you know, Milner slotted in at right back. They took him off, and Milner slotted in at right back, and it changed the game. So I think Klopp has learnt from his mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not Liverpool can continue this momentum, they've got quite lucky over the past few weeks. A lot of decisions have gone their way. But you know what? That's football, and you've just got to accept it. So... yeah, as I said, I can't see Liverpool, you know, stumbling in this one. This is going to be a walk for him, a walk in the park. He'll be walking their dog.
Well, how about at Manchester City with Spurs? Same kind of idea, especially with the dominance that City's had, especially late here in the Premier League season, and kind of stumbled from the Spurs standpoint, where they've actually drawn into that Europa League battle with United, with Arsenal, a couple other teams.
This is going to be a game of chess. I think they play each other three times.
Right.
They got the Champions League game, and they got a league game sandwiched in between. Now, if you saw the City game in the FA Cup, they looked a bit lethargic, but at the same time, I think they knew that they were going to win that one, and they took their foot off the gas a bit. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a different animal, but Spurs have got a new stadium, and I know a lot of people have been laughing about the new stadium or not, but they don't realise how much energy this has given Spurs, how much momentum it's given them. You know, they've been dying to go back to that stadium, and now it's built. It's a beautiful stadium. The fans will be up for it. And let's be honest, you know, it's a game between two English teams. It's not as if it's a European club that's, well, you know, obviously, well, I'll say England, or we're not going to be in the EU, or British, I say. We're going to get into that. But yeah, it's not going to be a foreign team. So it's going to be a remarkable game. I can't call it, but gun to my head,
mm-hmm.
I think City will sneak it.
Okay. So in summary, advancing to the semifinals, which four teams are they?
Barcelona, Liverpool, Juventus, and City.
And your champion from those four?
Anyone but the English teams.
So Barca, Juve, that's it, huh?
Yeah.
That's going to be a good final.
That would be one hell of a final. You think they both get to the final? Because if I remember correctly, the path is, from that standpoint, the path would be Barca, Liverpool, and Juve City.
Correct.
The thing is, because of the way the competition is,
I can't
call a winner right now, because anything could happen. I could actually see Liverpool beating Barcelona over two legs.
Okay.
And it pains me to say this, but I can see them doing it. I don't think Barcelona are this formidable force like they once were. You know, they don't have your Xavis, your Iniestas, your Puyols. They've got players that are very good, but they're not at that level.
Right.
So, I don't know. But at the same time, they've got Messi. And when Messi wants to turn up, he turns up, and he just tears the place down. So, yeah, you know, he's got a point to prove, I guess.
No. Before I let you go, where can we find the Shoot the Defense podcast?
Ooh, you can find it on the FNX Network. You can find it on Audio Boom. You can find it on StadiumScene.tv. You can find it on iTunes. And anyone else that is happy to have... Oh, Radio Football. That's a new app. Download the app, Radio Football.
That's right.
Because we're on that as well. So, yeah.
Fantastic, mate. Always a pleasure to catch up to you, and look forward to speaking with you on and off the air many times in the near future.
Pleasure is all mine, gentlemen.
All right. And that's the great Stel Stiliano, massive show friend. Rob, I was thinking about this. You know, we talked about this with a bunch of podcasters that we discuss things with back and forth. And it always helps to have somebody that you can call on as a guest in a pinch. That used to be the great Jim Hart for us, where if we ever needed to speak to someone on any topic in football, Jim was always there for us. And Stella's that guy as well. A great mentor to both of us, and an absolute delight, and super knowledgeable across the board. So if you haven't listened to the Shoot the Defense podcast or anything Stella's put out there, you're really missing a lot, and you really need to get on that right away. So Rob, let's jump into it. I know we've got a couple of topics and just a little bit of time. So let's in passing talk about their Clásico real quick. Massive, massive result, 4-0. 5-0. For Germany, for Bayern Munich versus Borussia Dortmund over the weekend, inspiring a little angst from Marco Reus. And, you know, technically this race isn't completely over. If you think back a couple of months ago, Rob, we were talking about how how Germany are, and I'm, man, I keep doing that, how Bayern Munich can't get it straight. You know what I mean? Nico Kovac was on the hot seat. We discussed that before. And now here they are in first place. Are they good enough to hold on to this, especially seeing that they have really not much else to play for in this season in Germany?
Well, I wouldn't say much to play for, but I think given the fact that it is still a point, obviously Bayern could indeed slip up. Could. You never know what could happen. They still have to play the remaining games against Fortuna Düsseldorf, Werder Bremen, Nuremberg, Hannover 96, RB Leipzig, and Eintracht Frankfurt. Look at Dortmund's schedule. They have to play Mainz in their next game, Freiburg, Schalke, Werder Bremen, Düsseldorf, and Mönchengladbach. You would argue that Bayern perhaps has the more harder, easier schedule than Dortmund. So it might be just enough, but I think just because of that particular game that Bayern played over the weekend, a well-convinced game, won. I think this league is going to be over before we know it. And as much as many people want to say that it's not, I think you have to really look at Bayern as the winners of the 2018-19 Bundesliga.
Yes, sir. I certainly wouldn't tune out just yet. I think that Eintracht and Leipzig fixtures for Bayern really are going to be difficult. You know, it's something that can easily be a banana skin that would open the door for Dortmund. But you've got to see if Dortmund can take advantage. And, you know, that's going to be the second half of the equation is not only does Bayern slip, but does Dortmund take advantage of the slip? So we'll have to see if that materializes. Another quick little topic that we wanted to mention. Mauro Icardi returns to the San Siro really against, Spalletti's wants. Spalletti held him out one extra week because he didn't apologize to him, because Icardi didn't apologize to him. This is a mess. This is done, right? I mean, Icardi to Real Madrid. We might as well announce it now, right?
yeah, I guess so. I guess we have the insider. Icardi to Real Madrid.
I think that's what's going to end up happening in this point is that it's just a bridge too far. And I think even if Spalletti stays, which by many accounts he will not be, some are saying that he might not even survive the season. I just don't see Icardi repairing all of this damage that he's caused. And I do think that given the transfer budget that you see over at Real Madrid, given that Benzema's getting old, I think that Icardi is more than likely on his way to Real Madrid to bolster that attack and see what happens with Zidane moving forward. Last topic I want to talk about real quick is the CONCACAF Champions League, and really more so the performances that we've seen out of the MLS teams in this CONCACAF Champions League. And the reason we're bringing this up, Rob, is because of the first leg in the semifinals here. Sporting Kansas City drops a 5-0 result, I believe, at home to Monterrey. Second leg coming up this week. I don't see Sporting Kansas City getting back into this, but this kind of caps what you've got to say is a disappointing display by the MLS clubs, Rob, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's awful, absolutely awful. And the fact that, you know, these teams are just going to continue to be looking at poor performances. Yes, while we do have to realize that in the past, MLS teams have to, you know, want to establish themselves as the best in the continent. If it's going to be like this, then it's just going to be the same thing over and over again. Mm. The whole idea, and obviously we can have a huge tangent and huge conversation about whether to fix the season or whether to, you know, do something about, you know, certain teams, but it's something has to change, at least from an MLS standpoint, that is going to allow, hopefully, success for these teams to win a CONCACAF Champions League and to build on that success to hopefully make other teams, you know, fight for that title in the future.
Agreed. I did a little background homework. So if you go back to 2008-2009 season, which is the modern era of the Champions League for CONCACAF, you have, in 11 years, only 9 teams make the semifinals, 9 MLS teams, 44 spots available, 11 years. Only 9 teams have fulfilled those 44 spots. In comparison, Costa Rican sides have filled 4 of them, Mexican sides, 29 of them. And in those 9 teams, only Real Salt Lake, Montreal Impact, and Toronto FC have ever made the final from the semifinal point. Teams like the LA Galaxy, Seattle Sounders, we've seen the Vancouver Whitecaps go there, we've seen the New York Red Bull get there, and then in this year we see Sporting Kansas City getting there, and at the same time, I don't see them ever coming back from 5-0 against, if I remember correctly, second place Monterrey in Liga MX. I could be wrong, could be third place. It is third place, sorry about that. third place Monterrey from Liga MX. And on the flip side, Rob, we look at what has happened, in the quarterfinals. Santos Laguna, 6-2 aggregate over the Red Bull. Tigres, 3-0 aggregate over Houston. Monterrey, 3-1 aggregate over Atlanta United. An Atlanta United team that you could argue is the greatest single-season team of all time in MLS. And this is where we're at. None of those teams make the semifinals. And then massive egg on MLS's face with their only semifinal representative in Sporting Kansas City. I don't see them achieving a world-class situation for MLS by 2022. I just don't see it. We could get into the whole Frank DeBoer thing. We can get into the whole Miguel Almirón thing. We've done that ad nauseum. I don't think we need to do that again. But something needs to change, like you said, Rob. I'm wondering, does the league schedule need to change?
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, you think 100%. it needs to get a little earlier, right? I mean,
well, yeah, definitely. And I think there should be perhaps a break for some of these games.
I agree.
But something has to be changed. Something.
I completely agree as well. They need to make a provision that these teams get to have these matches moved somewhere along the way so that they can focus on the CONCACAF Champions League. I agree 100%. So let's go back to the trivia question, Rob, tonight. If you wouldn't mind. Before we get trivia, why don't you give us the rundown on the matches of the week?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a bunch of good matches as we start to go into the end of the season here in Europe. And also, I think we should make another announcement, Joe, while I look up for the games.
Yeah. One of the announcements I was thinking of making when we were going to run the closing credits was that you and I will be starting up in the next couple of weeks our Copa America previews. So that will be coming up. We're going to preview all 12 teams, kind of like what we did last year for the World Cup with 32 teams. We're going to do a separate 12-show preview of all the teams in the Copa America, and we'll be bringing that to you slowly but surely over the next couple of months, closing out in time for the Copa America that'll be starting up sometime in June.
So the matches to watch. We have a lot of good matches here, but obviously the big ones. In the Champions League, we have Spurs hosting Manchester City Tuesday at 3 p.m. On that same day and time, we have Liverpool hosting Porto in their first leg. On Wednesday, we have Ajax taking on Juventus Wednesday at 3 p.m. Also at that same time, we have Manchester United taking on Barcelona. In the Europa League, we have Arsenal against Napoli Thursday at 3 p.m. In the Bundesliga, we have Leipzig and Wolfsburg Saturday at 9:30 a.m. Going back to Italy, we have AC Milan taking on Lazio Saturday at 2:30 p.m. In La Liga, we have the Seville Derby. We have Sevilla taking on Real Betis Saturday at 2:45. In MLS, we have the Seattle Sounders taking on Toronto Saturday at 4 p.m. In the Premier League, a big one, Liverpool against Chelsea Sunday at 11:30 a.m. And in Ligue 1, where we could indeed technically confirm our first champion. We didn't see it from PSG this weekend due to their draw against Strasbourg, but Lille will take on PSG Sunday at 3 p.m. A win for PSG would confirm them as Ligue 1 champions.
That'll do it. So, trivia question time, my friend. Why don't you give it to us again, and I'll give you my answers.
All right. So, Mo Salah became the third fastest player to score 50 goals in the least amount of games. Can you name the other two to have scored 50 goals in less games?
So the traditional trivia answer to any question goal scoring in the Premier League is Alan Shearer.
Alan Shearer is the record holder. He scored 50 goals in 66 games. Mo Salah scored 50 goals in 69 games. There is one more who scored 50 goals in more games than Alan Shearer, but less than Mo Salah.
And I told you there was a name that I wrote down. I gave you two names and then I wrote a backup. So the two names that I wrote down were Alan Shearer and Sergio Aguero.
Aguero is not the answer.
And my backup was Wayne Rooney.
He is not the answer. Ooh, either, but
all right.
But did play with Rooney at one point of his career.
So not Cristiano Ronaldo.
No.
All right, you have to give it to me. I don't want to run out of time.
All right. So the second place winner is Ruud van Nistelrooy with 68 games.
You know what? I think that's come up once before somewhere along the way. I do remember
that. He's usually
that.
In those type of...
he's another one of those. Yeah, he's another one of those answers. So another one's Robin van Persie. Darn Dutch, I'm telling you. All right, man. So without any further ado, the closing music?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's fire it up here. And for episode 239 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Stel Stiliano from Shoot the Defense for joining us. Next week,
We're going to talk about the first legs of the Champions League and Europa League, give you some results in that. We're going to crown possibly a champion in France and in Italy, depending on results as well. And like I said, keep an eye out for our previews of the Copa America. So for episode 239 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.